listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode I don't friggin' know of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I was Retroid.
Was?
In some past life, I don't know, it's years ago, decades ago now, I just can't remember. I don't remember who I am.
Joe, I'm going to just double check what episode number we're on without accidentally logging into, for fudge's sake, autocomplete's just being like, what episode are we on? What planet are we on? I don't know. Like, there's been talk about frigging space travel still whilst all this shit's been going on. Like, oh, it's episode 260! Way!
260!
Way! It's been a very long time since we had an episode.
I think it's been 10 years.
So we haven't had an episode up since February 23rd. Lots of shit happened to everybody here before the world went to utter shit. Both groups of us have had to deal with personal tragedy, which was not COVID related, but has definitely been exasperated by freaking COVID-19.
Oh yeah, massively.
Hugely so, to the extent where people haven't been able to go through proper mourning processes. People haven't seen loved ones. So that's us. I mean, if you're wondering, I mean, aside from that, so for the past couple of weeks, however, there has been a will. There has been a will to record an episode. However, we then had to deal with the mental hardship of really tough work days, which kind of led to my brain melting several times. We then also had to deal with Virgin Media losing the ability to do anything useful up at Retroid's end.
What is internet?
I don't know. It apparently was a deep philosophical question for Virgin Media a few weeks ago, in which pretty much the entirety of its network went tits up. I mean, it was great. There was like a service outage map that I saw of the UK, and it was just like this red blob covering almost the entirety of UK. To some of the outage was the things that didn't make it as far as Cornwall, because Virgin Media, I think they might be able to serve Sunnostall, which is kind of north of where Paul and I live. They might get as far as there, but they certainly don't get as far as where we live. We're too far south. So between psychological distress and technological issues, which I might add were also complicated further tonight by Skype deciding that what is sound was also an issue.
What is sound? Here's all the sound all at once.
Yes. So we've had to find an alternative arrangement for recording for the minute in terms of what we're using to get everybody to communicate over the internet. Not Zoom, surprisingly, but that came pretty close. So yeah, welcome to episode 260. It's the apocalypse. I haven't seen all four horsemen yet. However, I have seen a couple of pictures of, cats riding on white animals. So,
what?
A pale rider or something, or whatever doth appear. Whatever, revelations. I mean, to be fair, I'm at the right point in my Supernatural rewatch, which I'm slowly, ever slowly making my way through, because I'm at the end of season 4 at the moment. So, I mean, we're going to switch up to season 5 when it gets proper apocalypse soon. And speaking of Supernatural, E4 decided in their infinite wisdom, because it's finally showing season 14, which started during lockdown, it decided to move it from after two episodes at 10 p.m. on a Sunday after Batwoman. They decided to move it to just after midnight. So just then, you know, just at the start of a Monday morning, and then they went and topped themselves and moved it to after one in Monday morning. And it's like, because the viewing figures weren't very good. And it's like, well, it's not going to have any viewing figures now, you fucking fuckwits, is it?
Are you fine with this?
Well, no. And I got embroiled in a Twitter thread in which I said some terse words, but in which some other people said even terser words that occasionally gets liked and retweeted every so many times a week now, where E4 is taken very much to task. However, they've put on some stupid reality TV bullshit now after Batwoman, and it's like, well, how's that any better anyway? And also, Batwoman... it's like, why put it on after Batwoman? But also the perpetual curse Supernatural's had to face on E4, especially since they got rid of having GIF as a sponsor. I say got rid of GIF, obviously signed off. Was that basically Channel 4 have never given it a decent time slot? If it'd been on 9 over the years, I think it would have stood a bit of chance, but they've never given it a decent chance.
I think it hasn't had a decent time slot in all of its UK, time, to be honest, because even before now, it was on a really obscure time on ITV2.
Yes, it was. Yeah, when it was originally about, yeah. So it's always had a shit show over time. But it's fine.
It's amazing that there's any UK viewers of it.
I mean, it's fine, though, because... they've done their best to make sure they're only UK viewers. But the thing is that the US version of the Blu-ray works in the UK, and then in the last month since season 14 started airing in the UK, well, we may not have an official UK box set yet of Supernatural. The European versions are out, and they're all region 2 on the DVD. So... don't have to wait for E4 anyway. I mean, you could watch an awful catch-up, but then you have to deal with ads, whereas if you buy the DVD box set, boom.
Now, you see, Emily, you have to understand, they need precious hours to put up those episodes of Big Bang Theory.
I could really do with just erasing Big Bang Theory from existence at this point.
I have no idea if they're still doing that with Big Bang Theory. Oh, you haven't actually watched TV in so long.
Well, to be fair, E4's turned itself into a cesspit of not wanting to wander onto it most of the time anyway, because of the constant Big Bang Theory repeats and How I Met Your Mother at one point as well. So, you know.
It boggles my mind that they've, they did very similar with, two series that I really wanted to watch, way back in the midst of time. And this was when Channel 4 just had Channel 4.
Yeah.
It was just Channel 4. They did the graveyard slot for Babylon 5 right at the end. I remember that and being really bloody annoyed at it. And they did that, as previously mentioned, the whole farcical rigmarole of buying Angel.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then putting it on at 6 p.m. and then cutting it to hell because it wasn't suitable for 6 p.m.
Yeah, because I think the first season, if I remember rightly, at least part of it in the UK is rated 18, if not all of it.
It does make me think that maybe things get sold to channels like that, maybe there should be like a stipulation that they don't actually move the time slot within a season. So, if they're going to, fucking stick it on at like 6 p.m. on a, Thursday or whatever, they're going to... they've, officially got to keep that time slot.
It's just baffling to me that, they have these several channels and stuff like All Four, and they still manage to, twat about with these series.
But
you can't actually keep, catch them.
But you know what's great, guys, is that if you're looking for a show that has depth, length, ships... And lots of other delightful things going on in it, and some and handsome boys.
For a second there, I thought this was going to start getting sexual.
You can watch seasons 1 to 13 of Supernatural on Amazon Prime in the UK. I believe currently in the US, the show is on, I want to say Hulu. I don't think it's on Netflix anymore. It might be, there's definitely some movement going on. It might be on Netflix. But anyway, certainly in the UK it is on Amazon Prime for free, at least the last time I checked in the last month or so. So, you know.
You see, as tribute to, you know, how awesome the interface of Amazon Prime is, I didn't know that.
Mm. They're like hiding the good stuff on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Amazon Prime has got a hell of a lot of stuff on it, but you don't know.
Well, it's a bit like Netflix, because actually Netflix has got some really good stuff hiding in places, but the way they've got the whole thing set up and the weird algorithms they've got running around the scenes, you might not ever know about it.
Yeah, I mean, they really push certain things on Netflix, and a lot of the time, you know, you can kind of leave it a week or two, and then you go back onto Netflix, and they've got a couple of new things, but then the rest of it's the stuff that you've kind of scrolled past previously and gone, nah, not really in the mood for that.
Yeah.
It can be a bit like that, but I tweeted about it several weeks back now.
Mm.
But they had a recommendation, and they go, "Oh, you know, you'll like this." Something like 93%, you know, compatibility. It was a documentary series about a Northern football club.
The fuck?
And it's just. Yeah, the you know my level of interest in sport in general, and especially football, hovers somewhere south of 0%.
Did you like too many videos about chips and gravy?
Did this email come April 1st? It was like a personalised April Fool's joke.
Like that series about whippets.
So, yeah, not stereotyping, totally stereotyping. To be fair,
I'm fine because most of those stereotypes are south of me.
I took a BuzzFeed quiz earlier to see how northern my food tastes were, and I got something like 17 out of 34. And it's like, oh, you know a bit about northern food, but you're not like a true blah blah. But like, there was a lot of stuff that gets classed as northern that I didn't realise black pudding was northern.
Oh yeah, black pudding is northern
because it gets served a lot down here. Maybe it's out on the outer edges, away from the London folks that tend to have it, in the southeast. Oh,
yeah. Most of it is not London.
Yeah,
when they say northern,
even though some people might be further south than them. Anyway, so I suppose because it's been such a long bloody time, and we cannot sanely go through everything everyone's doing. However, based on questions from. The internet, because I did a really freaking scientific survey before this episode today. I mean, it's still open at the time of recording, but some sciencing was happening with people being asked stuff and opinions, because why not?
Were you being led by the science?
I was being led by the science. I was being so led by the mother freaking science. So, we have 6 votes on Facebook, totaling a question of, are you playing Animal Crossing New Horizons? Now, 33% have said yes, and 67% have said no, out of 6 votes. Okay, fair enough, fair enough. However, on Twitter, which, to be fair, is always a bit more active for the podcast has had, in response to the same question, but with fewer GIFs, we've had 25 votes since I opened the polls 7 hours ago now, apparently, and on Twitter, with a much larger sampling pool, we see very scientific, very scientific. We're doing it by the numbers here, guys. Are you playing Animal Crossing New Horizons? No, 48%. Yes, 52%.
It's the will of the people.
Yep, will of the people. Animal Crossing is everywhere. So I say we're limiting ourselves to what we're talking about, but I have been playing one of the games of lockdown, if not the game.
The lockdown game.
The lockdown game, aka Animal Crossing New Horizons. So I wanted to talk...
I do have to say, it could not have arrived at a better time if Nintendo had planned it.
I mean, there is like conspiracy theory going around.
I mean, it was just weirdly prescient. It was just, you know, you could have been sitting on, you know, we've got a finished Animal Crossing, but we're not going to release it until we think it's the right time. Oh, the world's gone to hell and everyone's locked in. Here you go. Have Animal Crossing.
I mean, to be fair, Bethesda could have maybe gotten a similar effect if they'd released even another edition of Skyrim at this point.
I would have been all over that again.
Yeah. So I've been playing Animal Crossing New Horizons, and yes, it is the game of lockdown. It is, again, a game that thrusts you into Tom Nook's weird capitalistic society.
Okay.
Where...
For a second there, I wonder where you're going with thrusting you into Tom Nook's...
You were so worried. I could just hear that gasp of breath there going, oh God, what you going to say? What you going to say?
Muscular arms.
I mean... AA3.
Are we back to Supernatural again?
No, but AA3 has got recorded instances now of Animal Crossing New Horizon fanfic. Speaking of AA3, the demand for its services has risen so dramatically during lockdown worldwide that at certain points they had to restrict certain bits of how the service worked in order for the servers to cope. They then had one of their quarterly fundraising drives, and they'd been asking for something like, it was either $132,000 or $232,000, something around that, and they made more than double that. They made over $450,000 in a fundraising drive.
Not bad. I'm just wondering. Presumably, they've got a spreadsheet where they, you know, they think, you know, the peaks and troughs are going to be for demand, and you know where they have to put, you know, more server space.
Yeah.
Or you know, bandwidth. So would that be the shipping forecast?
Oh, I'm gonna cry. It's so good. Thank you, Retroid. Anyway, going back to Animal Crossing New Horizon, of which there is fanfic on AO3, I haven't dared read any, I want to add. However, two of the characters in it, two of the animal characters, there is a lot of shipping of them together.
Which two?
I believe it's Flick and CJ. Let me just double check that, because it would be terrible if I got that wrong. But the thing is, they live together. Nintendo have kind of denied it, but the thing is that they're roommates and they really like each other, and just saying they're roommates just doesn't cut it anymore. Yeah, so, yeah, CJ and Flick are gay.
Everyone is locked in and a little bit frisky.
So Flick is a red chameleon with, like, a whole kind of, like, punky emo goth thing going on. He really likes insects. And CJ is this...
He really likes what?
Insects.
Okay.
And CJ is a beaver. And he really, really likes fish.
I thought he was going to say he really, really likes.
And they live together and are partners. They do refer to each other as partners, and do nice little things for each other. So it's like, I have a feeling I know now that I'm talking about this, what most of that AO3 fanfic must be about. It's those two. It's totally those two. And then there's been fan art of people doing like real, like turning the Animal Crossing animals into humans. It's like a reverse furry thing, almost, it feels like.
Okay.
And it's been like, okay.
A lot of people have got
a lot of investment and a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, so I checked earlier because I got asked by a friend on Twitter, like, oh, you know, like they told me they'd done a lot of hours into Animal Crossing. And I checked mine because obviously the Switch tells you how many hours you've been putting in our game. I'd done at that point 110 hours, so that was before I went on a massive like iron manhole cover making spree because they were selling hot at the shop today at Nick's Corner, and I made a lot of money that way. I made something about 150,000 bells because I had a load of iron saved in storage. Freaking made bank, guys. However, I still didn't put any more money towards my house, for which I'm on the... I kind of describe it by loan sizes. So I'm on the loan size that's about, I think, 752,000 bells. and I think I've paid off most of it. If I do really well in the turnip stalks market this week, I might be able to finish paying it off. However, I also do keep being distracted by high price items on the island shop. So,
That's how capitalism works.
It could go either way. And in fact, I've now realised that maybe I need to log into the game again, because I think I forgot to do some things today, which would cost me money. Oh, Paul's just handing me the Switch. Sorry, guys. I'm just going to turn the volume off on my Switch a minute and just double check. Did I go and get my free bells and order...
And order
stuff from the online store within the game.
See, this is how I get my quiet time when she's on Animal Crossing.
But basically, I think it's actually working a lot better than the previous games, because I have played all of the previous games bar the original on... was there two? Did it come out on N64 originally or GameCube?
It came out on N64, but only in Japan.
Yeah.
I think. And then it got slightly rejigged, slightly added to, and came out on GameCube.
Yeah, so I haven't played that. I played... The first one I played was the first DS game that they released, which was... What was that? Was that World? Yeah, that would be Animal Crossing World, I think.
For some reason, I'm just looking at the shelf here.
World,
yeah.
Yeah, so I had that on DS, and the online for that back in the day was freaking... I think I managed to play twice with some friends online. That was really tough going. So I managed that. And then I had New Leaf on 3DS. Put quite a bit of time into that. I don't think I managed any online with that. Maybe once. I tried playing the City one that was on, that was Wii or Wii U? Oh, God.
Wii.
Yeah. I didn't play the designer one. That just wasn't my scene.
Yeah.
No, there's nothing for me to buy today. I did get my points, though, so I'm going to save the game and get off it. So, yeah, I wanted to do that, obviously, before it, you know, went past midnight or something, and I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, whereas me and Mrs. Retroid played the GameCube version extensively, which I had to import, so every time had to pop in the Action Replay disc and then pop in the, you know, the US version of Animal Crossing, which I still have. It's up on the shelf.
Yay!
And, yeah, put a lot of time into that and did stuff like unlocking the NES games and put them on the GBA that I had. So that was cool. Then played it on the DS. Got it on the Wii, including the microphone.
Mm-mm.
But never really put time in on that. And then also got it on 3DS. And... Yeah, we were both putting in time, but they started doing it so that you didn't have the, you know, the separate islands. I preferred on the GameCube where we each had a memory card, and I would have my village, and she'd have hers. And if you put, you know, if you swap them around, or if you put, you know, the second player's memory card in the second slot, you could then travel to their village.
Okay.
And drop things off. And, you know, obviously, you know, pick up, you know, different, you know, fruit from the trees and then take it back.
Wait a minute. I've just remembered something from internet past. I do remember ages ago, there was a story going around about how somebody had played a lot of Animal Crossing and left lots of letters on it and stuff or something like that. And they were like a parent who passed away. And then their kid found all the messages in there.
Yeah, that was a thing as well.
That was a thing, and that was on the GameCube version.
Yeah, that was wow.
Yeah. So I think the game's come a long way, and I think the online's working a lot easier. I'll admit that if somebody's got high turnip prices, and you try to, you know, they decide to do a dodo code or something to like try and get people outside of their friends list, it gets really interesting really fast as everyone tries to pile in on the island to go sell. especially if it's getting close to when the price changes. I had some interesting experiences. I've had some good experiences, but I've had some interesting experiences trying to sell. I had my highest price ever for turnips last week on the island at 348 bells, and I sold on that day. And then my price has plummeted for the rest of the week.
It's a lot like life.
Yeah. I don't understand why anyone plays the stock market at this point. I think the turnips market might actually be more volatile than real stocks, or at least stuff that's kind of like more stable, like government bonds and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, well, at least turnip prices can go up.
I got told that what the new AER rate on my ISA was the other day, and it made me laugh and then cry. So,
could you say? Oh god, everything's going to hell.
Yeah.
I preferred it when you could have the one console and different villages, but they seem to have locked it down now so that if you've got the one console, you have the one village.
Yeah.
Which I dislike, because that seems to me to be a way of trying to flog no more hardware.
So can you, obviously, if you've got like another user profile there on the Switch, can you have like another save file on the cart?
You can have another house in that village. And you are a secondary player. You are not a primary player. You cannot have a village of your own.
Oh my god, I did not realise that.
Yeah, I just think that's extremely dodgy.
Because they don't do anything like that with any other games. Like, if you start, I must have completed that. Okay, so I finished playing Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild just before lockdown came in. And I played on Paul's cart for that, but I'm assuming I must have had a separate... I had my own save file. Like, I didn't affect Paul's save file for that.
Yeah, so far as I know, it's a very specific Animal Crossing thing that they've started to do.
Yeah, not that hashtag, not okay.
I think they might have started that on the 3DS version. My wife started playing it first because, you know, she was the one who was, yes, you know, we have a 3DS, we will be getting this now. And I was, okay, stand back out, you know, safely out the way. And when I started playing on it, I just found that, yeah, there were just things that I was, you know, more or less locked out from because I was not the main player. He was treating me as like a player too, and I thought, ugh.
Yeah.
And just kind of put me off.
No surprise. I'm gonna have to move us on now because there have been other things enjoyed during this time that's probably been easier on introverts than anyone else.
I have been doing lots of rewatching.
How many different shows are you rewatching at the moment?
Well, let's see. I'd already watched Picard, and then I rewatched that to see if I thought better of it. And the answer is yes, I did, but it to me, it is still the most disappointing new Trek.
Yeah, we haven't rewatched it yet. We finished watching it whilst the episodes were coming out.
It worked better when I could watch, you know, like one or two an evening.
I'm still unsure how I feel about it. I feel like the ending was very unsatisfying.
I just think...
What about you, Paul Picard? How did you find the ending?
Yeah, I kind of felt like they were going to do something with his... did they actually call it aromatic syndrome in Picard? Because I know in the episode All Good Things, he has it. Mm. And I don't think they specifically kind of mention aromatic syndrome. So that was a bit kind of weird.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was like all of a sudden came on, like it had been building up this entire season, and then to kind of deal with it in that way seemed rather weak.
But also Chekhov's body. Chekhov's android body.
Can I just say that Chekhov...
but not... We're talking about the playwright here, not the Star Trek, the original series character. just putting that there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whistles.
So the concept of Chekhov's gun. So the foreshadowing for what was going to happen with Picard. I was like, they're not gonna, because look at this thing they keep referring to. There's no fucking way he's gone. So yeah, and then the whole handling with like Data's consciousness was just a bit like, what?
Yeah, I kind of felt like there were certain parts of it where it was like there wasn't even like a hint that Data was there digitally, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, you obviously have his neurons or neural net or, you know,
somewhere
a neuron
here and there.
Type thing that, you know, they developed, you know, Sochi and whatnot from.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there wasn't any mention that, like, Data was still technically alive there.
And not in her.
And even so, I mean, why hadn't they have put Data into an android body at this point then if they, you know...
Well,
could do it so easily for Picard.
The way I sort of passed it was that, you know, the whole thing was... but again, it's you know, it's just kind of, you know, slightly dodgy logic in the series.
Yeah, it kind of felt
you know, maybe Data did not want to be outside that simulation, but then he wanted an end, and...
Mm.
To me, that seemed it was more a device to give the character more of a send-off rather than just the crap that happened in a Star Trek Nemesis.
Best thing, I could understand what they were trying to do with the general themes, but the way that they went about it seemed unsatisfying.
That is pretty much it.
Mm.
You know, I've said before that, you know, some of my favourite... you know, fictions are, you know, the nature of what is sentience. And the whole, you know, is a, you know, can an android, can an AI be, you know, self-aware in the same way that, you know, a biological creature or a biological being can be. So from that perspective, you know, the whole idea of it, you know, it was right up my alley. And I liked the whole idea that she was, you know, barely, you know, like 3 or 4 years old.
Mm.
And she had the, you know, all these constructs in memory there to, you know, kind of give her a grounding. But to me, it just seemed to be harking back to better fiction. Like the whole, you know, giving an AI or an artificial life form a past to stop them from, you know, freaking out is Blade Runner.
Yeah.
You know, the whole... You know, when they reach that age, they start going insane.
Yeah.
So have them die. And then that, you know, that's not a problem anymore because they are, after all, a product and they don't matter. And then there was the whole, the threat, the existential threat, which was, oh, right, you played Mass Effect. I see.
Because that was all that felt like, that whole massive threat with the AI intelligence coming in from another dimension. Yeah. It's like, oh, so it's the Reapers again. Huh.
All these complaints about New Trek, if we didn't have, you know, 2 seasons of Discovery and we just had, you know, this season of Picard, I would be, you know, falling much more heavily on the side of, yeah, they're slightly fucking it up.
Yeah.
Whereas with, you know, with this, it's just I do not know how they've got you know, some of the pedigree that they have and some of the backstory that they have, and they've still come up with Picard wearing an eye patch and doing a really bad French accent.
Yeah,
I kind of feel like there has been a theme between like Discovery season 2 and Picard, though, like some kind of unshown kind of theme with kind of general kind of AI.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a little bit disappointing that they didn't do as much with that. But knowing that from the trailers of season three of Discovery, with what looks to be, well, it's not really a spoiler because it's you know, trailer, but looks to be like the Federation has shrank to literally a couple of, you know, a couple of planets, really. Which kind of from you know, I kind of like the foreshadowing in a way in Picard of that happening with you know, the threat of you know, worlds actually leaving the Federation because the Federation has been trying to help the Romulans and stuff.
Well, yeah, which, you know, as it turns out, it is because of the Romulans you know, being double agents in the Federation.
I'm gonna move.
It would be nice to see more of that, but yeah, it's just in general. So yeah, in summary, with Picard, I liked it more in a binge watch, but it was still disappointing.
Yeah,
and I think it's going to be interesting taking Star Trek, the franchise as a whole at the moment, with its kind of joined up. Themes and whatnot. It's going to be interesting kind of seeing how those play out in the different eras.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In related Star Trek news, but without going into too much depth, Paul and I started a Star Trek DS9 rewatch.
And why was this?
Because we watched a documentary, which was called...
No, it isn't. It's because I said I'd rewatched it and it was good. That's why.
It was called What We Left Behind, which was a play on the last episode title of DS9, which is What We Leave Behind, which is kind of a present tense version.
But it was made a couple of years ago with crowdfunding. And it brought like a lot of the old stars back together and that before several of them actually passed away in the last few years. Which was nice to actually see them and hear them talk about, you know, how they felt about things and how things developed. And we're only on the start, sort of first few episodes of season two. I'm finding it a bit of an issue trying to get through the monster of the week-esque nature at the minute.
That is why I was skipping through.
Yeah, we did end up skipping the end of season one, because I kind of did roughly remember what happened with it, and the whole I just didn't want to relive the idea of like religious types just trying to be absolute assholes to people teaching like science. So
I'll say religious types. It's that one religious leader.
Yeah. From the Bajoran side, who wants to be, was it the new Kai?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, but
was that Kai Winn from that early point?
I think she wasn't a Kai yet. I think the Kai.
She's still currently trying to get it.
Quinn.
She's trying to get it at the minute. Anyway, so we're sort of into the sort of first bit of season two at the minute. So that's going on. Paul, why have you moved for this? I can't see anything now, dude. So we've got that going on. I did finish watching Sons of Anarchy. As well, which ended in not an unexpected way, but very,
it's really,
ouch.
It's really hard to end a TV series. And while it seemed like it was wrapping up relatively nicely, with characters getting comeuppances. I do feel like that last scene was a bit like, what?
It was almost like an outlaw facing off against the law, NBC game filled with bullets, equivalent of kind of thing.
But only it wasn't quite that exciting. It was literally him just like deciding, like, because the police were obviously chasing it.
Yeah.
And the police weren't overtaking or, you know, kind of getting oncoming. And then all of a sudden that truck, and Jax just decides,
To be fair, he was going to get caught up with eventually, and with everything that he'd done, basically, he was either facing... California has a death penalty, so he was potentially facing, like, a numerous too many harsh charges. Yeah. Plus, he was in the position where if he went into jail, him actually staying alive in jail was incredibly slim.
But, I mean, I think just the way that it was kind of put together, it just seemed kind of like... Yes, he shouldn't kind of just ride off into the sunset. He, you know, needs consequences, blah, blah, blah. Yes, he's going out on his own terms. By the same token, it just seemed rather like, you know, he was running from the law and then just decided he didn't fancy living anymore.
I don't know. That's not how I read it. I think it was, to me, it was more he had no choice. He genuinely had no choice because he wasn't going to be living if he was living. So
it struck the wrong chord.
No choice. It was going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
So
he made a choice.
He will choose when it's going to happen rather than. Yeah.
Conversely, on the other side of the US and catching up with more classic television, I'm now on to season 4 of The Sopranos. So for anyone who's wanting to watch that's a good point. So Picard's on Amazon, DS9 is on Netflix in the UK, Sons of Anarchy is on Netflix in the UK, The Sopranos is on Now TV as part of Sky's deal with HBO. So I've been watching that. It's interesting. I get why it had such a following. Can't say much more about it at the minute, but I've been enjoying it during exercise sessions. And I'm just looking at the list. I think the only other things I'm going to mention before I just kind of peter out is I started playing Sniper Elite 3 for the first time in 5 years. It may have had something to do with VE Day. I was like, do you know what? I want to shoot some Nazis. So Italian fascists.
How many Nazi ball shots?
Currently in this playthrough, none. However, I did get some very, very tasteful double kills.
Are we still talking about the ball shots now?
I've also come across some interesting glitches. What's frustrating is that because PS4 and Facebook parted ways in terms of having like any form of sign-on and like social sharing last year, if I want to share any videos or photos from PS4 at the moment, I either have to use the PlayStation, for photos you can only use anyway the PlayStation messaging app and have the app. So you send a message to an account, it's like a group chat thing that's signed into on like your phone, and like you'll get it, and then you can download that and save it to Facebook or whatever. And if you want to share a video on Facebook, you would have to be signed into YouTube. And because I hate what happens with like gamer YouTube, your best bet is to basically save videos unlisted, so you can then share just the link with friends and family on Facebook.
That's pretty much what I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so Sniper Elite 3, been going through. I've gone further than when I previously tried playing it, which I'm actually really pleased with. I've been following the on-screen tips during like loading screens, and they say outright, just save often, save all the time. Best snipers save, because I keep getting caught out so often that I do need to load to my last save, because if I tried to recover from the position where I everything's gone to shit, that there would be no winning. There would be no mission complete.
Yeah, lots of saves.
Lots and lots of saves. And then the two things that have been keeping Paul and me sane, we have been keeping up with current events through the most important how should I put this? Skit/observational current affairs shows available. We've been watching The MASH Report on BBC. Technically catching up through BBC iPlayer. They've only done 6 lockdown episodes, and they finished like the season the end of last week. if you're in the UK and you want to just see some coverage of the whole bullshit just slowly get spiraling, check out the Mash Report on BBC iPlayer. And then we've also, when it's been doing episodes, been watching The Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Yeah.
That's an LTV one. At least in the UK. And, again, somebody, you know, he's filming from home, like the Mash Report, everyone on that's been, filming from home. The last few episodes, of John Oliver's during lockdown, like they tried to find a painting.
It was very tasteful.
It's an incredibly tasteful painting. It was stunning. The level of detail that these paintings went into and had previously been sold at auction, and the fact they managed to track it down was just amazing. So, yes, so we've been keeping up to date with current affairs with the Mash Report and Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. In all frankness, both shows have had clearer insights than any government press conference between the UK or the US during this crisis.
Yep.
So
have you heard of I think it's called Kirkus Act or something like that on YouTube?
Oh yes.
Yeah. Their coronavirus video remains my source for coronavirus shizzle.
Yeah.
It was more concise, more informative, went into more depth, explained everything far better than any UK media I have seen about this pandemic.
I mean, to be fair, also Dr. Mike's YouTube channel has a fair decent whack of coronavirus videos, and also the SciShow is actually really good for
SciShow is very good. I'm subscribed to that.
Are you
going to sign off?
No, I wasn't going to sign off. I was just going to say that's like. That it's been tough getting information. Still, despite everything, I still trust the Who's reporting on things.
Yes.
They're very embattled and just trying to do their motherfucking job. Unlike everyone else, it seems he's in power.
It's like, no, get back on the hamster wheel. Earn us some billionaire peanuts.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, that's been delightful. Absolutely delightful. So, Paul, is there anything you wanted to bring in that you've been up to? Haven't you been doing that thing? That thing that we're going to be doing a bit about on Friday over Skype, hopefully. That involves lots of people.
Well, maybe not Skype.
It depends how it behaves.
So, yes, I've been making a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. And it's kind of hard work, but I started out with a big world concept and kind of went from there, and it ties into a campaign that I'm also running with a couple of other people,
which we literally only had one session of before the lockdown.
That's still in its infancy as well. Lots and lots of plans and whatnot. There's just so many different bits to it. And in general, I think kind of looking at the advice on DMing is to kind of be both prepared to an extent and also don't be too prepared, because things will go, you know, sideways. Things will never go the way that you expect, but it's kind of getting that kind of in between, allowing kind of players to have freedom, but also creating the world well enough for things to not seem like you're just making it up on the fly. So that's kind of why I've tried to kind of create the world first, and then allow the players to populate with their characters. And then those stories from those characters will be interwoven into the kind of, you know, the world story, as it were. So it's very kind of an interesting way of kind of storytelling and game playing, really. If that at all makes sense to, like, anyone.
A bit.
And there's just a huge amount to kind of learn and know about and prepare. It's a major... Or I've felt that it's a major effort, at least for my first time DMing. The players have all been, you know, very good at, you know, trying to kind of make it as easy for me as possible, and being like really excited about the campaign as well, which is incredibly helpful, actually, because otherwise I'd just be, you know, sat there writing all this stuff and being like, I don't know whether they're going to like this or not.
I mean, I know I will, but...
Do you?
I feel like I trust your ability to imagine a fictional world and the stories that may happen therein.
It's, I mean, obviously I can kind of create it in my head and whatnot. It's the issue is probably actually describing the world in, you know, the ways that, you know, I intend for players to see the world. Because with my original campaign, the one that I've only had put like one session of so far, I kind of built it around kind of physicality. So I haven't just kind of been like, okay, well, players get, you know, character sheet and whatnot. I've actually printed out and given people like physical cash. Allowed people to have physical item cards and stuff like that. So just to kind of, I don't know, make it like less imaginary, I suppose, in a way, you know, having a tactile feel for stuff. And also got people to explore their characters a bit more, so that instead of just having like pretty much like you've created a new character with all the information on the sheet, I've actually kind of tried to get people to delve into the backstories to the characters as well, and what connections they've had with the world previously, so that I can pull those connections into the main narrative and make them feel like they're characters within the world rather than characters that have just been plonked on the world. So it's kind of, yeah, trying to kind of do it from a philosophical standpoint, I suppose.
Can I tell people about the characters I've been making?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so the campaign we started just before lockdown, which we haven't gone back to yet, I made a character because they're set in the same world, but they're separated by time.
Yes.
So the character I made in that was like a gender-reversed Harry Dresden as a sorcerer called Harry or Harriet Dres. And they were human. And then for the in the one that we're just getting started, that's in the future of this world, I've made a gender-reversed half-elf called Edwin, no surname currently, who is meant to be based on Elaine from the Harry Dresden novels. I'm not saying that this stuff like massively follows canon, but there's certain characteristics types with like the magic and stuff and like backstory I've like adapted a bit for like a D&D world. I know there's one person, one of our other groups, who has a very heavily influenced Dresden Files character that is pretty much Harry Dresden in D&D. But I don't think I'd want to go that far. Kind of want it to be able to evolve and stuff. Almost like
a unique character.
Almost like you might do with like, yeah, it's just kind of just playing around with it, basically, with the concept more.
So you're basically having Harry Dresden gender reversed as a starting character, and then things will presumably progress differently from in the novels.
Yes, but that's in like the that's in your first campaign. So in the second one we start, and that it's this character Elaine, but actually the Edwin.
Yeah,
and
there's, I mean, I can't really kind of say too much because obviously Emily's, you know, part of the, you know.
Yeah, I'm part of the group. You can't give away any secrets.
Yeah. And it's been really, really annoying because I've been like, oh, I've had this really exciting idea and, you know, how to do this and how to do that. And it's like, I can't tell anyone.
Oh no.
So yeah. Speaking of D&D and online, Roll 20, we tried that out for one session with our regular D&D group and didn't get very far with it. We're not sure if it's because DM didn't activate some plus membership or whatever that we did stump up for them for a month, because you had to add card details in order to access something that had been gifted to you. So I'm assuming so we could just roll into like a roll-in subscription. But the quality was incredibly dubious for the cool. But you couldn't tell if that's because you weren't paying for it, or if it was because just general server load, or it was because you weren't paying for it and thus you weren't getting prioritized in any way across the server load.
But one thing that we have found is that Skype is just rubbish.
As well.
So, we're going to have to find a new way of doing stuff on Friday, and I'm not 100% sure how we're going to do that without requiring everybody to make
Skype just bothers to behave. If it doesn't, though, yeah, we will just... I think it's going to be a case of we're going to do some crazy shit with Zoom. Because I could set up some stuff with Zoom, potentially, if I needed to.
Yes, set fire to Skype.
Yeah. Anyway, so Dungeons & Dragons... you've been getting back into Super Mario Maker 2 as well, haven't you? Because they've released the final updates for it.
I say final, the last major update. So that kind of implies that there might possibly be, you know, kind of rolling on, maybe like an extra item or, you know, whatnot to use. But yeah, this one's the big one where they actually allow people to make a world rather than just like a level. So you can actually have multiple maps and you know, like Super Mario World. So you can basically kind of create however many levels you want and then kind of pop them into, you know, your world and have people kind of playing through, you know, pretty much like an entire game's worth, Mario game's worth of levels that you've created, which is actually really cool. They've also added a whole load of new power-ups, which includes a Super Mario Bros. 2 mushroom, which is interesting because it actually takes on some of the video game logic of Super Mario Bros. 2, where you can literally just stand on enemies and pick them up and chuck them about, which is actually an interesting one, considering you can do that with stuff like bullet bills and have them kind of keep on going.
Because that was not a Mario game to start off with.
No, Doki Doki Panic Japan. So I've been watching... I think there's a YouTuber, I think Ryuka, who does a lot of kind of Super Mario Maker 2 videos, and he's actually really quite entertaining. He's very good at the levels, and he will basically just blast through like a whole load of like expert levels, and it's just quite nice to watch. Oh, yeah, and as Emily's kind of written on the notes here, Final Fantasy VII Remake, which we still need to kind of finish off.
Well, the first episode.
Yes, yeah. So, let's see. Yeah, because I'm just trying to think of where I got up to. Still in War Market.
Don't spoil too much.
No, I won't. Just to say that there's a lot of content that has been added on, or added in. I know in the original game, summons don't come in until, I think it's once you leave Midgar. I think the Chocobo Farm is the first time that you get a summon.
Yeah, and then you don't get anything else until you're on the cargo ship thing, isn't it?
No, I think Junon Cannon, you get, was it Shiva or Ifrit there?
I think Ifrit's on the ship.
Yeah, Ifrit might be on the ship, but...
But
Shiva's in the town.
Okay.
Like that. But yeah, you get. I mean, I've been playing through it. I've not exactly been, you know, grinding up majorly, but I'm already kind of level, was it 20 or so, and have probably about 5 or 6 summon materials. Get all sorts of different materials that you didn't get in the original game, and yeah, so there's an amazing amount of content that has been, you know, kind of added to it, and even new story content as well. So things don't always go as the original did.
Have to say, I was never that hugely impressed by
the original
Final Fantasy VII. All right.
Fair. I mean, you know, it's not everybody's cup of tea. I'm not going to be one of those people that's like, oh, no, you should definitely play it. You should play it.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, I mean, I remember the first time that I, you know, put it on, and I was kind of confused with the battle system, because I kind of, like, keep on pressing X. Why isn't he doing anything? Keep on pressing X. So, yeah, I think that kind of frustrated a lot of people, that kind of thought that it would be more of an action game than, like, strategy.
Mind you, doesn't it depend on what game mode that you set things to partially as well?
What, on the original?
No, I was thinking the remake.
No, we're talking about the original.
Okay, sorry, yeah.
obviously, you can kind of increase the speed and whatnot, but that can give you a disadvantage at times. But yeah, it's just that turn-based thing that was kind of a bit weird to kind of get your head around. And also dying at the scorpion at the beginning until you figure out that, you know, you have to make sure that you attack only at certain times and using the lightning materia and whatnot. But after that point, then it kind of got a bit like, ah, okay. That makes more sense.
Retroid, is there anything else you wanted to... Have you been doing any electronic stuff? Because I haven't been keeping a massive eye on Twitter because, you know, it's like a massive clusterfuck at the moment.
I fixed an Atari 2600. Which is nice. Also modded it to run on just a composite display, because most of these older machines, they were RF, so you had to tune it in on analog TV, and that's a whole world of pain. Even before you get to the idea of tuning it into a modern LCD. So yeah, fixed that. Modded it to run on in a composite with audio out as well. Fixed a 1978 Pong machine. So that was fun. A black and white one as well. It didn't even have any colour on it.
I think my parents had one of those kicking about. I never was allowed to go on it.
I remember them, but I never had one. I remember playing on it, just like with the Atari 2600. I played on a neighbor's machine, but didn't have one myself because the games cost about 40 quid, which could go to hell in the early 80s. Been fiddling around with a TV that I picked up from the curbside, which is nice. 21-inch CRT. Non-widescreen, which seems to be down to the ground, because widescreen CRTs, they're fine. You know, I've got a Trinitron, but, you know.
I still remember, can I just say, I still remember, like, a massive widescreen CRT. I think my gran won it, and it, like, lived in the corner of the living room for freaking years. Mm. It was just massive. And it massive.
Took up the corner of the living
it
room.
Took, yeah, it did take up the corner of the living room. It was just so huge.
Whatever happened to that?
I think it died, is what happened.
Fair.
Yeah, they tend to. But, so, yeah, with electronics, with everything going on, it's not really been my mojo.
Yeah, I can get that.
Yeah. In addition to Picard, I decided to rewatch the entirety of Legion,
okay,
which is on the Virgin.
The Virgin.
On demand. Yes. So I presume it's on like Now TV or Sky or, you know,
I mean, it was at some. It was previously.
Yeah.
But who can say?
Yeah, yeah. I was slightly surprised it was still there on, you know, on demand on Virgin. It's like, okay, I'll watch it then.
Yeah.
That was fun, rather than having to wait a year between the seasons. Because I always preferred to binge it anyway, so when a season would come along, I'd wait until, you know, the end of the season. And then just binge. Whereas this, it worked better for me, because I don't know about you, but, you know, when I watch a series, when you've had a break of, you know, 1, maybe 2 years, at least for the first episode, maybe, you know, somewhat into the second one, you're sitting there trying to remember what the hell went on.
Mm.
Just from, you know, what happened last time. So, you know, this worked better. It was like three volumes, you know, three graphic novel volumes of one story is the best way of putting it, because each season has its own arc and it has its own flavour. So, yeah, I quite enjoyed watching that. Also, because I'd caught one or two bits of Friday Night Dinner. So I decided to start from the beginning. So I have binged Friday Night Dinner from the very beginning.
Is it not delightful?
It is rather. It's
a nice bit of squirrel.
Yeah, nice bit of squirrel.
Oh, a lovely bit of squirrel.
Is it bad that the father kind of reminds me of my dad?
No comment.
In what way?
I'm not entirely sure. Just
there's a squirrelness about both of them that's very familiar.
Yeah. Also, the dressing up. The dressing up. Like, you know, especially that. Have you seen the last episode?
No. I think the last one I saw was the Au Pair.
Okay.
Okay. In that case, I won't spoil
it. No more comment on that.
No.
With the lovely creamy tea. And he reminds me of someone. I'm just saying that. But I've caught up with that, which is annoying. It's like I have to watch it with the episodes with the plebs now. It's a no. You should be on a massive treadmill just making these episodes continuously for me so I can watch them 2 or 3 in a row. God damn it. There's just no work ethic.
Oh, the bag in the tree.
Because no one can go to work.
I've got the bag in the tree.
The bag in the tree, because they're...
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
To be fair, we are suffering from a similar situation on our street right now. Yeah. But it's a long life bag. And it's there. And it's been there for weeks and nobody can do anything about it because the tree's about as tall as a house.
And we've
it's right at the top.
We've gone on walks and, you know, it's like, you know, kind of walk past and it's like, there's a bag in the tree. This was a couple of times before we actually seen the episode.
Yeah, the thing is, it has been there since, I think it ended up there after, like, the really bad storms earlier in the year.
Yeah.
Before the current crisis, you know. Nothing's going to happen about it now. That, like, we need a very bad storm probably to take it away, but there is obviously then a risk that it might just take the tree anyway. So.
Or it will just appear on a different tree down the road.
Or it'll be over 2 different branches.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
there's no way that's coming down.
So, yeah, Friday Night Dinner. For those wondering, in the UK, that is available on All 4, which is... Yeah, Channel 4's digital service.
I think some seasons are also on Netflix, but to be honest, considering All 4 is free, you may as well watch it on that.
I mean, that's if you can get it to work. I think All 4 is probably one of the most complained about catch-up services / streaming services in the UK that I see. There's a lot of devices where even though it has apps, it tends not to work very well.
Didn't know that.
Oh, I had tremendous fun. I've got a BT UView box.
Oh dear.
And I've been using it on that, and on some episodes it would start off and then pause and then play a little bit more and then pause, and then play a little bit more and then pause, and go, well, there's, you know, we're on 300, you know, megabit.
Yeah.
Cable. You know, there's absolutely no, you know, issue here. So I would pause it, and sure enough, it would say that, you know, this episode was like an hour and 45 minutes.
No.
So I would have to stop it, go back to the menu, return to the episode again, and hope that it would actually, you know, cotton on that it was, you know, like 23 minutes.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, it's... Yeah, so UView has access to it, but...
Our smart TV's got access to it. But I think for a lot of the streaming services and that, if you have access to something like a Chromecast or an Amazon Fire Stick, it's sometimes like either streaming through apps from your phone to a Chromecast or through apps on a Fire Stick is actually some of the better ways to just watch stuff because they tend to actually get updated, basically.
Yeah. It's like what was nice was that a friend of mine was saying, oh, you know, so, you know, what do you use for stuff like that? I go, well, I either watch stuff on, you know, on my PC via the websites, which, by the way, All Four has got a far bigger catalogue of stuff on there if you go through that than, you know, through some of the apps. For example, all4.com or whatever the hell the website is, I forget, that has Seinfeld on.
Hmm.
Whereas the apps don't, that I've seen.
That must be some weird licensing bullshit.
Yeah, it's just as soon as something like that comes up, I bet it's because, you know, it's like, you know, streaming service and, you know, one's website and one's clusters, you know, a smart TV thing. It's I bet there's a whole load of stuff like that, which is just, But yeah. A friend of mine, you know, said, you know, what would you recommend? He's go, well, I picked this up, you know, cheap from like a charity shop. Remember when they were open? Remember shops? They were good, weren't they?
Yeah.
And I said, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, does it have BritBox on? And I responded with something like, well, I don't know why you would want BritBox, but no, it doesn't. But it probably will because they update that. And then literally the next day, my UView box restarted and BritBox was there as an app.
Oh, joy.
So it's listening.
If anyone listening has actually tried out BritBox to see what the quality of shows available on it for, which you've already paid for once, depending on your age and whether or not you're the person that pays for the license fee in your house.
That's my issue with it.
Really. Let us know if you think it's any cop or if it's a load of shit. I have a feeling it's probably the latter. With a bit of the former.
Is that paid for service?
Or? Yes. That's why the thing is like, okay, ITV, fine, you didn't really pay for that, but then it's got BBC on it as well. And it's like, well, like, license fee payers have already paid for this shit. Like, and you're asking us to pay for it again on a monthly subscription.
Yeah. When I heard about it, I thought, oh, that'll be good for America. And then it was in Britain as well. And you go, what? We have this thing called television. It's where those things are.
Yeah.
It's where those things were. Why the hell would I subscribe to that?
But also, it's kind of ridiculous because they're getting to the point now where they actually, certainly for drama and comedy content, they're going to be running out of program stock for stuff that hasn't been shown before. And they're going to have to start repeating stuff more anyway.
Yeah. I mean, good God.
And also, I feel like, again, their target market is actually people over the age of 60, which also just happens to coincide with a huge chunk of people that have difficulty signing up to apps, services, and may not even have smartphones or digital devices that connect to TV.
They'll have forgotten that they watched it in the first place.
That is one advantage that they have. However, they will obviously then suffer through, and God help them if they're trying to set it up during the present crisis and they can't have family members over. As it is, I've had to do tech support several times over the phone during things, and that has been fun. Let me tell you.
I have been rather fortunate in that I haven't had to do that over the phone. I've had to do it in person, but that's fine. But, you know, no extended family or anything like that.
Due to having family members in, not quite, at least on my side, not in the shielding level, but the next level down.
Yeah.
Haven't been able to go see anyone.
Yeah.
Even though my parents lived around the corner. Technically, I'm basically banned from seeing anyone other than Paul at the moment. I'm not meant to. I can see you on the opposite side of the street. That's it.
Now, the question is this following government guidelines? Is this basically for your own comfort, or rules?
It's following government guidelines for people. They're like, if you're in the at most risk category, which is the shielding category, you just do not leave the house, do not see other human beings, stay away from everyone, become a hermit, no matter what the psychological effects might be. Then the next level down, where it's like, if you have these medical conditions or you're over the age of 70, then again, you should avoid people. But you're allowed out of the house, but you should avoid people.
Yeah. I've managed to strong arm my mother into not going shopping and not going into town.
The amount of
It was a struggle because she was bloody minded.
Yeah.
Okay, so my experience so far.
Oh no, because Paul is working in retail during these troubling times.
Yes, I'm
sorry.
Yeah. Obviously.
Don't name names.
No, I won't. Obviously, well, everywhere has the 2 meter rule.
That bastard at number 7. But yeah, go on.
Now, there are some people that will basically shout at you if you get within 2 meters of them, even accidentally. And then there are other people that will sidle up right next to you as though, this entire thing isn't happening.
As though tens of thousands have died.
Or because you're wearing a uniform, you're invisible.
Yeah. And it's just really frustrating because, to be had a go at about something and then having customers come up to you and be right in your face. Obviously not literally like right in your face type thing, but close enough. Then you'll have like people that will be like, oh, well, why aren't you enforcing this rule? You're a staff member, you should be telling people what to do. And it's like, these are customers. We can't tell them what to do without kind of, hitting them a lot of the time.
Although the temptation is there.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I feel like I've dragged us too much off topic now.
But I'll
just say there are there's a level of magic person who thinks that they're immune.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 doors down from me, they seem to have a lot of immediate family who don't look like them, who visited over the last few days.
Oh, God.
And it's just, you arseholes are the reason we're going to have another spike at the end of this month and the beginning of June.
Yeah. But we've got Animal Crossing New Horizons.
I've got the entirety of... I've nearly finished the first season of Mr. Robot again.
You know what? I need to get back on that. But I probably would have to rewatch from the beginning.
I would recommend it, because if you've got it available, if you've got access to Amazon Prime, it's right there.
Mm.
So, I would recommend it, because for a start, I've noticed things in the first season. It's like, oh, yeah.
Well, I liked what when I was watching it the first time when I was trying, because I got all the way through season one and some of the way through season two, was that whenever you had a close enough look of the screens and they were working in like terminal and stuff, like I did understand some of what they were typing, which was just like, ooh!
Oh yeah, it's like the overall plot, the arc of the series is is a little bit out there, but the thing is, it's not impossible. And what they're saying makes sense.
Yeah.
It's within the realms of, it makes sense. It's in possibility. The only issue I have is sometimes because if you know if I watch it late at night, I might put the subtitles on so you know I don't have it quite as loud.
Yeah.
And when they say Raspberry Pi, it's not PIE. People who do the subtitles. Also, people who do the subtitles, why did you censor all the swears when they're shouting them? It's just... Why are you just... My ears are fine hearing this, but for some reason my reading ability is going to get all uppity about it.
Maybe deaf people aren't allowed to read swears.
Or maybe it's something to do with the broadcasters and, you know, actually having, like, a text version of, like, the subtitles kind of going through and...
Maybe, yeah. But it just struck me as weird.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And also the final thing, you know, because, finished watching stuff and, you know, currently on Mr. Robot. Recently dipped my toes back into Xbox Live after, you know, being off live for several years. And of course since then they did the Xbox Game Pass, didn't they?
Yes.
So I've ended up signing up for several years of Xbox Live and converting it to Game Pass. And as a consequence, several days ago they added Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh.
So, yeah, and of course, Game Pass makes sense for us because all the Microsoft published games get added to it.
Yeah,
you know, they're permanent fixtures. So all the rare stuff that's been published on Xbox is added to it. Stuff like the Gears series, Halo, all of that appears on Game Pass on launch day. Forza Horizons, you know, all of that. So it's great because it means that a lot of stuff that, you know, I would probably, you know, have to, wait until it got down to a reasonable price, I've got instant access to. So it means that we can, I can play these games on Xbox Live with my wife.
Nice.
So it works out well. And, one final thing, just before doing this podcast tonight, we accidentally finished, or we stumbled into the finish of Halo 5.
Ooh. I'm assuming you were thinking there was going to be some side missions or something that you could like go into prior to that point.
The story's just beginning. Wait, hang on. That's a credit roll.
What?
It just seemed to be an incredibly short game, and have either of you played much Halo?
We've only played the original, and we never managed to complete. I think the final bit kept getting stuck. No, we never completed the final bit. We kept getting stuck.
Oh, okay. It was so long ago.
Yeah.
I really don't remember. That was when my brother had
an Xbox.
Yeah.
I mean, that's who we borrowed it from.
I'm just going to continue tutting for several hours. But, so we've played the entire series through, you know, several times now.
Yeah.
As mentioned previously, because I picked up some, you know, cheap 360 extra copies so we could, you know, play them on LAN. Now we can play Halo 5. And Halo 4 ended with Cortana, who's the, you know, the blue, glowy, she looks a bit naked, cyber girlfriend of Master Chef. going a little bit, suffering from an AI condition called rampancy, where if an AI has been active for too long, it starts fragmenting into... you know, different aspects, and it's sort of overthinking and in everything. So it's kind of a fatal mental condition for AIs. And that's how, you know, Halo 4 ended. It comes to Halo 5. Oh, that's cured. By the way, I've decided I'm going to team up with all the other AIs and subjugate their universe.
Oh, okay. As you do.
And that's about it. And it looks pretty, but it just seems like there was less game there. And the story arc, you know, because we were discussing it over the end credits with the, is that it? You know, for all the stuff that happened in Halo 4 and for all the stuff that happened in, you know, some of the other ones, you get some nice callbacks to some of the, you know, the earlier games, but it's just, it's bafflingly disappointing.
Wow.
And yeah, it's just, you know, if I'd bought an X-Bone and a copy of this so we could play it, first of all, I would have been disappointed because it was the first Halo game to not have split screen.
Yeah.
But, you know, even ignoring all that, I would have been disappointed if I'd bought an X-Bone for that, because it just, the game was underwhelming. And this new one that's going to come out with, you know, Series X, had better be better than this.
I haven't actually looked at any of the, was it Xbox? Is it Xbox X?
Xbox Series X.
Xbox Series X stuff that came out last
week. I know,
week.
It's a brilliant name, isn't it? Yeah, it's just...
I saw some stuff happening on Twitter, but I, like, just... You know, like, I don't think exclusives are something that can sway me too much now. I think it's... it's other things. And also how they target. Like, I will be very biased if the targeting doesn't seem to feel like several genders play games.
Yes, we need that. I mean, I think they've made a little bit of progress towards that. Like, for example, in... Gears 5, the main character, and in fact cover star, is a woman. So it's nice of them to realise that, you know, there's more than just, you know, men built like brick shit houses.
Jeez.
So, you know, that was nice, but yeah. I will say, from my perspective, the thing which is impressing me from what I've heard, less so the actual footage, because I've seen some of it and it's like, well, it looks nice enough, but then so is, you know, PS5. They're very, you know, close in spec. But at least the Microsoft published game, you know, launch titles for it are going to be cross compatible.
Okay.
So the launch Halo game for Xbox Series X, which is still a bad title.
Yeah.
I will be able to play it on my Xbox One.
Okay.
Because they're natively backwards compatible, and they've said that they will, you know, their titles will straddle the generation like that. So, you know, it'll be like maybe 720 or 1080p on the X-Bone, you know, 30 frames per second, but it'll be like 4K, 60 frames per second on the Series X. And they've said that they will do that for at least, you know, a period of time after that. So,
I mean, I got to say, though, it's all good and well, everyone talking about like releasing new consoles and shit at the moment. And I know that, for instance, with the case of the PS5, they were looking at the holiday season, like as in like, you know, near Thanksgiving and Christmas this year for releasing the PS5. And I just don't see physical hardware releases making that this year easily. Or there's going to be extreme shortages if they do.
It's going to be interesting. Because there's a hell of a lot going on that you otherwise wouldn't have had to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, I know that from the hardware side, certainly things like chip makers and that, they haven't been too badly affected from what I've seen. It's more the case of actually getting the product out and in the hands of, you know, places that are actually using the shit to make other products.
One example was... the aforementioned Final Fantasy VII remake, where I saw a statement released by Square saying that they were trying to make sure that there were, you know, extra copies being shipped earlier to try and cover any delays.
Yeah.
So there would be enough for launch. So, you know, you may get one early, you may get one late. As it turned out, my sister-in-law got her copy about a week before anyone else.
Yeah, I think.
Or at least, you know, a week before launch date, anyway.
I saw a couple of people had that.
Yeah.
We bought ours, we decided to buy ours digitally, though I did fork out for the stuff with like all the extra shit, including summons and stuff. So.
Yeah.
But just because there was just no way. I mean, it's freaking Cornwall. Because we hadn't thought, we didn't think we were going to get it on release, and then obviously crap went down, and we were like, well, Animal Crossing's all good and well, but like, you know what we need in our life is a game that we can both enjoy, because Paul's not an Animal Crossing fan. But we also at the same time got a new hard drive to go with the PS4, so we can finally actually download stuff, and like, because I've not really used any of the games I've been getting with my PlayStation Plus because I haven't had memory. Anyway, it's going to be interesting. I mean, going forward, like TV seasons, films, and that, like, Christ knows what's going to happen with backlogs. I'm also concerned about new scripts not getting picked up, because there's going to be a huge production backlog of stuff that was confirmed that was actually going to be really good. Now gets cancelled.
Yeah, it's going to be. We're going to see reverberations probably for a good 18 months.
I really hope that Walking Dead finishes getting made and Supernatural finishes getting made, because they were both. I mean, Walking Dead wasn't obviously on its final season, but it hadn't finished its season, but it was getting really friggin' tense. And Supernatural is on its final season, and now it's looking like it's going to have like a season 15B, kind of, because they filmed a whole load of stuff before shutting down, which would have covered another couple of episodes, but there was a load of post that needed to happen on them.
Yeah.
Without access to massive computers that can deal with that, nobody could do anything.
As an example, with that related, several people working on Star Trek Discovery Season 3 have stated that all the filming has finished.
Mm.
So they're working on coordinating, you know, doing all the, you know, as much of the post-production as they possibly can. You know, basically remotely, because it's the only thing they can do.
Yeah. So, I think a lot of the big problems, if it's not necessarily a lot of the problems with post-production is having access to the hardware, because the computer systems involved are actually quite something a lot of the time. And it isn't something that you can easily just take home. Because it's not just the physical hardware, it's whatever networks it's put into, because obviously with like corporate networks for media production, there's a kind of a weird mix of obviously capability in terms of like it falling off to like storage that's off the computer, along with security and stuff. And it's a bit more than somebody putting in some bash commands or something into a web server remotely. You know, it's a little bit more than that kind of computing maintenance. I mean, hell, even I did some editing on my little work Surface laptop last week. If anyone sees it, I did a lovely little video for Bluefruit that was based on some audio the founder did that talked about embedded systems. Anyway, edited that on my tiny PC, and Paul had to lend me a hard drive just so I could extend the RAM, because it was just like, grrr, just having a fun time with that.
Just running out of drive space.
It was more that it didn't have enough memory, random access memory, to deal with it, let alone the GPU just being like,
have some virtual.
And that was just for a simple little video with minimal effects. Trying to edit a whole sci-fi or fantasy series or something. Jeez.
Especially something like, you know, Discovery, which has a lot of really expensive effects.
Mind you, as Paul and I found out in a video from yesterday, the hologram screen effecty things that were on Picard especially, not that hard to do. You just have to film it right to begin with.
Yeah. That's half the trick, isn't it? Yeah. Especially when you hear about these things where they go into reshoots.
Mm.
It's usually because whoever set it up the first time around didn't quite set it up right.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, I think we have definitely gone... I mean, we've definitely got a nice long episode for everybody.
Is it time to lock down this episode?
Oh! You went there. It works on so many levels.
We're all still here.
It works on so many levels, though, because it's the lockdown, but also it's a term in filmmaking and stuff.
Yeah. You could say there's nowhere for us to go with this now.
But anyway, I think because of everything... So that's it for this episode. We hope everyone's keeping safe. Yeah. We're sorry it's been so long, but as you might have seen on some of our social medias, like, shit just happened, and obviously as we explained at the start of the episode. So we hope you're all keeping safe. You can read if you need to chat to us about anything, you can do so on like our Facebook and Twitters. But yeah, so it's good night from
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can listen to us on Stitcher, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, wherever the hell it is, Spotify, Pocket Casts, and a couple of other places, I believe. You can talk to us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, Instagram at Nerds Podcast. Not that I updated that much, but shush. You can also find us on Facebook at Nerds Assemble Podcast. That's everything, and we hope to try and technology now at this point mostly permitting, get back into a regular habit of giving you delightful episodes. So good night.
Good night.
Good night. 2020.